I long ago made peace with my condition. Each night, as you close your eyes to the world and drift into dreamtime, I roam the streets, unable to sleep or find rest. My noctambulatory wanderings pull me deep into the night, slipping into the darkness as if in a waking dream. Where you might tune your sense of day and night to the sunrise and sunset, I am pulled by a different gravitational field, lured up and out by each night's moonrise, only to return to my chambers at moonset when the first rays of weak tea vampire light signal the break of dawn. There are some things best left unseen in the light of day, things that are better felt or sensed or experienced in the dark. A dark so luminous that we begin to see in new ways, beyond the surfaces and reflections of light, into the occult chambers and hidden labyrinths of meaning, fear, desire, and all the deep hauntings that tremble within our own shadows. It was only after meeting some of my fellow somnambulists that I learned to develop the second sight, not merely an adaptation to seeing in the dark as much as an intuitive relation to things themselves, as they shimmer and pulse in the cold heat of pure night. Of course, I don't need to tell you any of this, since you too are one of us, or are soon to be, soon to join the ranks of the seeing unseen. And tonight we finally meet, you and I, here outside the gallery, where our fellow night trawlers have gathered to explore a different kind of all-night shut-eye. So let us proceed, as we learn to see with our eyes closed tight and our minds wide open. Tread lightly and watch your step, but don't worry, I'll be right here, watching you, guiding you through the darkness, as if second sight were only a voice in your ear describing the world to you as you strain to envision it. Let go, and let the show reveal itself to you. Now, before we enter the gallery, we need to retune our senses so that we can hear what the various works might be saying to us. For instance, from here on the sidewalk, you might hear the strains of some kind of ambient music for non-space, and you might look up to the billboard above the entrance and ask yourself what exactly you're seeing. Here we see, or hear, Gareth Spore's 1-1, a graphical notation of a Brian Eno score reprocessed through unseen modes of reading, literally pressed into vinyl and translated from sight to sound unseen. How do we turn music into something to look at? How do we make music from black marks? Ways of seeing become ways of reading and of hearing. Listen closely as we move inside. As if to mimic the fading embers of the dying sun, we enter the dark through the last of the light. Kamau Patton's yellow offers us an unending sunset, simultaneously suggesting the shimmering crepuscular lights on the midnight bridges that connect San Francisco to the sleepy hamlets across the bay. And while the fading yellow light pushes out from the exhibition, we might begin to think of ourselves as entering an inhibition, as the works inside will have withdrawn from the light and from our ability to see them clearly. You'll have to trust my second sight to guide us, even though I too am fumbling in the dark, imagining a map of all these objects in the room, ordered in my mind like a memory map, as if to move further inwards in order to find our way out. As we move to the right, we are immediately invited to take one last look at the outside world of those blinking lights and ambient street sounds. The artist Isola and Norzi have installed their sculpture elsewhere, which acts as a telescope that pulls the light out of the sky and directly into your optic imagination. Carefully lower your gaze and put one eye to the lens, then follow the line of light through the peephole and out into the night world beyond the gallery's windows. What you see, or what you imagine you see, is in fact replicated as the actual sculpture that you are using as your vehicle for sight. The telescope is embedded in a real-time model of what you've been looking at across the street. Here is elsewhere, and there is back again. What's out there in the dark is also that that shapes us, what we can touch and feel, like the stardust we catch in our hands while gazing up at the nighttime cosmos. Along the right wall, you will find a number of works that play with seeing in the dark, or see what playing in the dark might look like. Christine Wong Yap's two-way window provides a different kind of aperture through which we might view another vision of ourselves. Peer into it, see if you can see your reflection, or if instead it sees you reflected back in your eyes. The eyes are said to be windows to the soul, but in the dark our souls may instead be peering back at us through shadowed panes, as if mirroring our desire to see ourselves clearly, even in blindness. In a similar way, Jesse Ash's Angel Tin looks back at us through the darkened lens of blotted out newsprint, an eye collage where the only surviving evidence of the day's events are the eyes that peer out at us from the half-buried images, ghosts of yesterday's news. Right there in front of you now, look, but don't touch. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Can you see where to feel, to read it? Inside the framed glass is Oliver Babin's I Mean, a found Braille inscription that questions how we make sense of language when we can't see it. Of course, you can't see me either, and yet I'm asking that you make sense of my language. Can you feel it? Can you feel my words? Can you feel my words tickling your ear until goosebumps raise themselves like Braille up and down your neck? If I could just reach out and touch. But then I pricked my finger on the single bronze nail that Bobbin sculpted to stand in for any number of real nails that one might hang an invisible artwork from. I know this because I was here when he didn't hammer it into the wall. The nail was part of a blind man's toolkit, which I only realized when I picked up the hammer and saw. And then Mandla Reuter's test sounded itself. Perhaps you heard it just now, or earlier when you arrived, or perhaps you haven't heard it at all yet. Don't worry, it will announce itself at any moment, signaling that the lights are about to go down even further as we settle in for the show. You'll have to trust me on this one, of course, and perhaps you trust me because I'm the one talking, or I'm the one reading. But I'm not. I'm not here at all, and I didn't write this. I'm over there in the corner reading your body language. I see how you slowly back away from the wall in order to get a better vantage point for seeing that the art that you know is somewhere there in front of you. And just then, as if sneaking up behind you, you almost, but not quite, bump into Freak Wombach's collection of still lives. Oh, what a racket that would have made. For a still life is only ever still until disturbed, and these objects are only ever waiting to be used for making sound effects. By standing in as silent surrogates for the actions they imply, these gloves, coconuts, and foil spell out a sentence waiting to be performed and sounded. The birds flew off when the five men came by horse. Later that night, they made a fire. And by the light of that fire, shadows were cast upon the walls of the cave. But this allegory itself is missing. Can you see where it's gone? Over there, hidden inside a book of all places. Can you see what's not there? Can you see where the cave's been carved out? Benoit Maret has cut one of his holes in philosophy, removing the allegory from the center of a Spanish language history of philosophy, leaving only its Platonic ideal, a non-space that casts its own shadows. But then, what can we make of a work that's not there, that is only a work precisely at the moment it's no longer there? Can you picture it? Can you make a picture of it? Nina Bier did. In her Encounter, she photographed the precise moment of interaction between a viewer and a sculpture, then destroyed the sculpture. Only when the work is destroyed can the new work be seen as what it is, both the record of the making of the work and the work itself. Can you picture it? Can you see a picture of it? What kind of work does it take to unmake such an encounter? And now I want you to take a moment to breathe. Close your eyes and stand perfectly still. Forget for a moment where you are, your surroundings, the context within which you might try to make sense of all that you can and cannot see, all that you imagine or I imagine for you. Take a deep breath. Perhaps you aren't here at all. Perhaps you're at home in your room, listening to me in the dark. Perhaps you're lying in a warm bath, complete with flickering candlelight as you hear my voice purr to you from the headphones. Perhaps right now you are putting on a pair of sunglasses that the artist Toria Cummings has left for you. Can you hear them? Over there. No, there. Mark. Voices calling out of the dark.
Polo.
Is it you? Are you there?
Marco.
Give me a sign.
Polo.
I'm reminded of Italo Calvino's Invisible Cities, in which Marco Polo and Kublai Khan exchange stories about the strange and wondrous cities they visited or merely heard described, so that these invisible cities only become real if the descriptions are convincing.
Marco.
We can get lost inside the folds of such cities.
Polo.
Calling out to others to help locate ourselves within this invisible realm. Will we be able to find ourselves, always wandering in the dark, just like the ever-restless Marco Polo? I guess we'll never know, is what Raymond Boisjoli and Ryan Peter might say, highlighting how, when searching for answers in the dark, we sometimes need to imagine what might be secreted away within each black balloon, what wonders might be hidden in such dark containers. I guess we'll never know. Just as we may never know what precisely David Stein's visual spectrum contains, its fluorescent text decomposing itself right here in front of us as we turn to face the other side of the front gallery. I might read it to you, but I too am in the dark. I'm reading this to you right now, with eyes shut, and my notes written in black ink on black vellum. So, into the darkness, the unknown. Watch out. Well, be mindful of where you're going, however. We wouldn't want you to hit your head. I'm watching you again, from over here across the room. Don't turn around. Just act natural. And I'm glad that Tegan Moore has installed her softer corners after dark, not only to cushion the space for any potential sharp elbows or not-so-sharp-eyed viewers, but also to edge protect, to soften the contours of our ever-shifting space that we're sharing here, now, together. In the dark, all manner of corners and angles can melt into shadowy soft spots, but sometimes not seeing's not enough, especially when it seems as if what little light remains in here keeps getting sucked out of the room. Can you see it go? Can you feel it? Can you hear the sucking sounds? Here, here, look. Lean in and look through the peephole. There's Dina Danish's Breathing in Light. There's much I could say about this piece, but I can't talk about it. The light's been pulled away from me, and I can no longer read the text in front of me. See? Do you see? Do you see? See how I can't read this? Let's move on now along the wall, watching our step even if we can't see it, and keeping an ear out for our dear Marco Polo, wearing his sunglasses at night, and making sure we don't tip over the invisible flowers, planted in the invisible pots, hanging there in front of you. Ludwikus Buchlis's study of the flower pot is perhaps all the more unsettling for the uncanny absences it shapes with its simple potholders. Like many works in this exhibit, it's as if what's taken away is precisely what makes the work. Or perhaps that's just what I've taken away so far. Shall we take it one step further? Good then. One step further. One step over. And aha. Well, I don't need to tell you. Just look at it. Now, I know that you want to touch it. But I need to ask that you resist the temptation. Yes, I'm sure that, like me, you know that Daniel Turner's so-called paintings are actually sculptural conglomerations of tar and adhesives, inglobulating into bulbous sacks of translucent goo. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't trust your vision and see exactly how this wave exerts its visual pull on you. But don't trust my viewpoint. Look for yourself. Look at what you can't see and what you don't touch, what is untouchable. I'll be over here, waving at you through the darkness, watching your spectator shape undulate and conglobulate inside its own dark balloons. The final piece in the front gallery is a sculpture by Seth Lower, but rather than describe it to you, I want to talk around it. So let's walk around and talk amongst ourselves while we look at Lower's work in our own mind's eye. Let's say I found something of mine and then buried it in the ground, far, far away from here. How could I show it to you? Now, I don't want to dig into Lower's personal history here, but let's just say he's produced a body of work that completes a portrait, even as the sitter is long gone and buried. As Sir Walter Raleigh said of the axe that was to split his head from his body, this is a sharp medicine, but it is a physician for all diseases and miseries. Okay, it's time to go deeper into the darkness. We're now going to extend our exercises in seeing, to exorcise the dark spirits and invisible ghosts haunting the far corners of the gallery. We noctambulists tend to be drawn to such haunted housings, where to see is precisely to not believe your eyes. And in this show, our curator Matthew Poe seems to be taking up this challenge, a challenge framed by Robert Smithson, who once asked, "Why not reconstruct one's inability to see? Let's give passing shape to the unconsolidated views around a work of art and develop a type of anti-vision or negative seeing." Indeed, we've been practicing this all night, to see the art precisely by seeing everything but the art itself, all that surrounds it, all that's taken away, the what's not there that make what's there happen. In fact, our anti-visionary Mr. Post is here among us tonight, in this very gallery, in fact, or so we are to believe. As we make our way now to the middle room, keep an eye or an ear or a limb out for Etienne Chambaud's Exercises in Lying. Here we might find the mysterious Mr. Post, lying down on the job, as it were, awaiting whatever questions we may ask of him. After all, he is the only person who has actually seen the exhibit in the daylight. He is both the ideal spectator and the ideal narrator, the memory guide to what has already been seen but is now occluded from view. Is he to be trusted? How will we know when we've encountered him that it's not his twin brother lying on his behalf? How do I know about any of this, since I too am only an artwork curated by Mr. Post? And I too am in the dark about his works, his intention, his vision of and for the show. So as we walk to the next room, let's see if we find him at his post, which may be nothing more than the empty space where he once stood, enveloped in light. Okay, when you've reached the entrance to the middle room, we can pause for a moment. I've been waiting here for you for as long as it has taken for you to arrive. Perhaps you're not here at all, but miles away or several days afterwards. That's okay, because you can pause the recording in a moment to listen to Jen Way's Black Forest. I don't want to keep you in the dark as to what happens, so you will trust that your own ears will lead your eyes into this cinematic black forest. Just make sure to keep your eyes out for the trees. Okay, now that we've left the Black Forest, we can move to the back room. At this point, you may be feeling your way along the walls, or perhaps your eyes have adjusted like all night eyes eventually do, and you've begun to shift into nocturnal anti-vision, which will help as we try to make sense of what we can and cannot see in front of us. But let's begin by looking up and around us. Imagine we're out in an open field in the dead of night, far from the lights of the city, where the night sky comes ablaze with starlight. Imagine the light of those stars traveling across the dark galaxy to reach us, to make distance itself visible, and how we orient ourselves in the immense dark of the cosmos. Now look around the gallery and see if you can make out the distant lights of the Pleiades cluster, organized to match their place in the sky above us at this very moment. Rosie Farrell has named each star after the French Pleiades poets, Renaissance dreamers who could see in the speed of starlight that, in the words of Pierre de Ronsard, "Time is flying, lady, time is flying." And as you navigate beneath the stars, you'll want to once more watch out for Tegan Moore's edge softeners, lest the gravitational pull of negative outer space sends you through the black hole of the gallery into one of its sharp corners. Almost as if in rhyme or counterpoint, Daniel Oates Kuhn's Trust Falls protects one of these corners with a sculpture that you wouldn't want to fall into. Don't trust me, though. Trust the artist. He's the one who made the description of what's now hidden in the dark, so dark that not even I can see it or guarantee that it's there at all. Still, if you're going to fall for this piece, I'll be right behind you, waiting to catch a glimpse. Blind trust is a game best played in the dark, but you might want to ask yourself if your humble narrator is at all trustworthy in the end. I mean, have you ever taken a good look at him? Is he even here or there at all? Follow the scent. Follow the scent, which might lead you to an indescribable meatwork, a decaying remnant of Brian Clifton's memory sculpture. It's indescribable because, like you, I've never seen it. In the same way that Clifton's tale of his Uncle John chasing after the infamous Lake Lop Nur in the Kingdom of Lolan, where the violent sandstorms actually move the lake each year, constantly escapes our vision. Like Marco Polo in his shifting tales of invisible cities, Clifton attempts to track his uncle's fantastical tales about a lake that is never seen but only ever described, just as his work in the gallery may very well be beneath your feet but for the shifting sands of time of night. Or perhaps the scent has led you elsewhere, towards the more fragrant work of Francesca Bennett and Nicolas Matranga, who ordered a dozen roses this morning, letting the florist choose the color and variety to be delivered to the gallery tonight, sight unseen. Perhaps these are the implied flowers for the invisible pots in the front room, or maybe they are the artist's gift, a substitute for what artists are supposed to make, things that can be seen, but instead an olfactory microclimate that does not require light or sight to sense the fragile beauty. I see you using your other senses now. See how your nose knows, your ears hear near and now, how your body learns to sense its place in darkened space, making micro-sculptural adjustments in order to compensate for the lack of light, the constraint from sight. I'm right here, but I've been watching you all along. From the revolving tin eyes of Gediminas Atkinas's sculpture, inserted into the darkness by Gintara's Dizziopetris in order to lend night sight from a blind vantage point. It's looking right through us, as we peer into the dark recesses of the gallery, hoping to meet its vacant stare. But don't take my word for it. Make your own words. Think of how each work becomes visible in your imagination, slowly built from language, language that slips and shimmies, slides off into shady impressions and hazy weather. Aren't you in control of what you see in your mind's eye? Who turned your light bulb on? And are you ready to make a move in this dark? Because now we find Snowden's a piece of perpetual perpetuity, an altered chess set, with surrogate pieces and invisible rules. The black mirrored cube slips over any piece, turning it into a talismanic object capable of all sorts of knight's moves. And the rules shift as bodies and objects interact in a series of nighttime moves. Are you not perhaps a pawn yourself in some invisible game right now? Who or what is pushing you along from piece to piece, maneuvering between other objects that exist in relation to each other as in some kind of life-size chess game? A piece is born needing practice, just like we must exercise our seeing to get to what we see. And here we have something from Derek Karner, from his series, What You See Is What You Get. Can you see it? Do you get it? Karner makes drawings that he then shows to only one person, and then are framed backwards to preserve their aura. Or at least that's what I've been told. This particular piece was shown by Karner to Mr. Post, who is now the only person to have seen both the original drawing and the completed artwork. Damn that Mr. Post and his curatorial stunt meat. Next time I see him, he's going to get an eyeful. Now, I could give you a richly detailed description of the drawing, but it would be as second-hand as the frame that holds it. But somewhere in there, in all that darkness and all that hiding, there's an amazing drawing that will never see the light of day. You have to believe it to see it. And over here. No, a bit more this way. No, over. Yep, okay, there you go. Good. There. Is Elena Narbutate's sculpture. Day and night are happening at the same time. This is a collage that casts a shadow upon itself, as if I were to chase my shadow, or if you were to chase me, since I've been cast to play the narrator who's been following you around all night. Now stop. Don't move. Can you hear me approaching? Do you hear my footsteps? I'm right behind you. Can you sense me? Can you feel my breath on the back of your neck? Now walk with me, out of the room and towards the door. Slowly. Don't make any sudden moves. The light's going to come up soon, and we need to return to our own dark corners of the city. Just listen to our footsteps, so in step with one another that they sound like one person. Someone close to you. Actually, these aren't my footsteps, and they aren't yours either. They're the writer's. He's been one step ahead of you all along. While I've been tailing you, he's been leading you by the tail. But it's okay. I'm over here now, watching you. I've been here all along. Stop and turn and look. You see the invisible light up there in the corner? Do you see it? Look again. Yes, there. You see? The invisible light? That's me, in my camera, watching you through my anti-vision lenses. With my nocturnal second sight. And I see you seeing me, as you see you listening to me, seeing you seeing me. Now close your eyes again and stand perfectly still. Perfectly still and perfectly quiet, so no one can see you, so that you become invisible, hidden in plain sight in the dark of the gallery. Perfectly still, breathing, and count to five. And the spell is broken. Open your eyes and see yourself out. See how your negative vision adjusts to the ripening blush of deep yellows, blues, and purples outside. And look for me in the fading starlight of sunrise as I recede into the dawn's cold shadows.